Today we have an extraordinary guest. He goes by the name Keanu. He's an actor on the world stage, attending major events around the globe and earning acclaim for his methodical research and dedication to his craft. You might know him from The Matrix or The Day the Earth Stood Still. I mean, perfect metaphors for the tangled web of MarTech and that feeling we get every time we hear another CDP getting acquired. That's right. We're not talking about that small town actor with the last name Reeves, you know, Mr. Oh, look at me. I'm John Wick. Our guest is someone far more distinguished, the head of research at the MarTech Weekly himself, Mr. Keanu Taylor. Keanu recently returned to Australia, yet he speaks with a relatively polished British accent. His latest performance involved something much more daring, the tackling of flat pack furniture from Temu, which he thinks will be easy to assemble, and then writing about it. Today, he's here to unpack far more important topics like one of the street kings that he is, the Marketing Technology Experience Center initiative, his incredible research articles, and the turmoil in the CDP market. So let's hear it from the MarTech devil's advocate himself. Welcome, Keanu.
What an introduction. I'm a little bit speechless. That that was fantastic.
Did you catch the movie references? There were five. You might need to watch it again, or at least listen to it again to catch those references. But it was quite fun. I don't know a lot of people named Keanu. It's quite a unique name.
It certainly is. I am for another movie reference. So I actually am named after Keanu Reeves. So my mom was a big fan of Point Break, which came out I think about 18 months before I was born.
Oh wow!
Funny. That's why I got the name. And the thing is, I've always had a bit of a problem with Keanu Reeves. I'm not sure if it's just, I know he's a nice guy or he seems like a nice guy, but I think I always just liked my name too much and I didn't want to share it with him. So I think I've only seen one Keanu Reeves movie ever, which is the first Matrix. So
really?
the other references, I know of those films, but they've gone a bit over my head if we had to go any deeper into them.
You're breaking your mother's heart, I think. Only one movie with Keanu Reeves.
I know. Poor form by me. But no, thank you for the fantastic intro. You've really set me up here, so I better deliver. I hope I'm as an engaging guest as you've suggested I will be.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But yeah, let's jump right in. I mean, the MarTech Weekly, it's been a roller coaster in 2024. Events all around the world, more events coming up in 2025. How did you get started with the MarTech Weekly? How did you and Juan actually meet up and move this forward?
Yeah, so I was originally a follower. I was a subscriber when Juan sort of started writing the MarTech Weekly. So I think I started following in early 2021. I loved Juan's writing. Like one's personality that came through in his writing as well. And he, I think something really resonated with me, which was the no bullshit, just saying things how they are. And, you know, the MarTech industry, I absolutely love it, but there is a lot of fluff, there is a lot of nonsense, there is a lot of bullshit, and there's a lot of confusion. And I just, what I really loved about Juan's writing and his analysis was just cutting through all of that. So I followed along for a few years. I was in enterprise MarTech consulting during that time. So I used the MarTech Weekly as a resource to make sure I was up to date. And then one fateful Sunday in October of 2023, Juan wrote an essay and published an essay about his experience writing for MarTech. And at the bottom, it said, if you're interested in writing and joining me, then let me know. So I sent him an email, we got talking, and then basically I came on part-time at first. So I was working my full-time job, doing sort of, you know, consulting by day and then research and writing by night.
Oh, wow.
And then, as you said, once I moved back to Australia at the back end of last year, I sort of joined the team full time, so now I'm the global head of research, and I get to do this every day. It's fantastic. I get to read and write, and you know, dig into the industry all the time. So I'm over the moon. Very happy where I've landed.
That's got to make some funny moments and some, you know, banter behind the scenes that we probably couldn't get into because, I mean, it's a small world. But I feel you mentioned that writing at, or that question that Juan asked at the end of the survey, it almost feels like it was a kind of a test to see who actually reads through the entire articles. And I've caught myself doing that. And one of the last ones I did that with, I try to stay up to date every week, but there's a lot of things going on. What's the data gravity topic? But I'd want to dive in that. But how do you decide what kind of stories you want to cover? I mean, like you mentioned, there's never a dull moment in MarTech. There's always something going on. Klaviyo raising prices. That dropped yesterday. CDP acquisitions. I mean, oh my God, can we have a moment of rest, please, and just enjoy what we have? It just feels like it's just never ending.
Yeah. It is never ending. So my partner always asks me, like, what are you writing about this week? Have you finally run out of topics? And I always say, no, there's no such thing, no such possibility. So I think the only time where you'll ever get a quiet week in the world of MarTech is in Thanksgiving week, because the Americans go quite quiet, but every other Touché. Week of the year. Yeah. Every other week of the year, it's busy. But in terms of choosing what we write about, so we look for things that are, you know, new, novel, or noteworthy. So if it fits any of those criteria, then it's sort of in scope. Our audience is really the enterprise B2C sort of consumer goods companies. So MarTech and marketing people who work in those companies. So as long as it has that sort of enterprise and B2C slant to it, and it's in scope. But in terms of, like, within that, anything can be a trigger for, you know, or a point of inspiration. So the Temu example was a great one, where I was just shocked by the customer experience I was getting, and I thought, you know what, I am going to sit down and write 3,000 words on it and really, you know, dive into it.
It sounds like a numbing experience. Every time, every corner, there's something just to get you hooked even further and drag you down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, for sure. It's really, I mean, I think it's terrible customer experience, but it's clearly doing, doing the job. It's growing the company at a really scary rate. You know, it only opened in 2022 was when they launched. So It's crazy that they've got, you know, 170, 180 monthly active users, people buying from the platform all the time. And, you know, it's a little bit scary because the customer experience, I don't know, I feel like some people will go in and they will genuinely be sort of tricked or, you know, pushed down a path that maybe they don't want to be pushed down because of the gamification, pricing optimization, you know, the constant reminders. I think during a period where there's a lot of pressure on people and their budgets and the money that they have, you know, the cost of living, it's a little bit scary. But that's a diatribe for a different day.
Yeah, no, definitely. But I think the response to the Temu article was quite good. And like I said, my personal favorite so far was the data gravity one, or insightful was the data gravity one. What kind of trends are you seeing in terms of your readership and the topics that are seem to be gaining the most traction?
Yeah, so I think CDP is always a massive one. And in my mind, that is because it is, I don't know, it's a weird category where I'm not even sure if it should be called a category.
That's one of your predictions, right? Kind of that the CDP category will be exited en masse by vendors. And I think Dylan Fly from Simon Data keeps on saying, hey, the whole situation is kind of proving that the whole CDP category has been ill-defined. You know, it's not the right term for that. My personal belief is that I kind of agree with that, but I do feel that the technology is still serving its purpose and will continue to do so. But sorry, I interrupted you. So many thoughts on this topic. I mean, it's never a dull moment.
No, not at all. But it's a good observation. It is a very ill-defined category. And I think part of it is that it's tried to cast the net too wide, because the sort of typical capabilities of a CDP and then some of the, you know, add-on capabilities that they can The only thing that connects those capabilities is that we're talking about customer data. So, you know, PII, first-party data.
Exactly. But
beyond that, there is a wide range of things that a CDP can be doing. It's integrations, or it's like probabilistic matching, or it's, you know, some of them can send emails or do website personalization. It is such a broad area that it covers in terms of capabilities. And basically, you know, it's not the best way to think about it is what you're actually trying to do is manage customer data.
Yeah.
What components you need depends on your business and your use cases. And I think this is where composability comes in, because that at least the capability to pick and choose what you need to compose a customer experience is really important. And I think the rise of composability is actually contributing to some of the pressure on the CDB category at the moment.
Yeah.
Because in the past, if you had a vendor, a CDB vendor, and let's say they get, you know, gold 10 stars or 5 stars out of 5 for their identity resolution, they get 5 stars out of 5 for their integrations, they get 2 stars for their, let's say, activation capabilities, yeah, and 2 stars for something else. You know, if it was a packaged CDP, the MarTech buyer is paying for everything, regardless of, you know, whether they think it's a particularly good feature or a not so good feature.
Absolutely.
And nowadays, what happens is the marketer will go, okay, well, I'm going to buy the 2 5-star features from you. I'm going to get some 5-star features from other vendors who, you know, play in this space, and I'm going to merge that together, and that's going to be my composable solution.
Yeah.
So I think there was a period where CDPs could get away with, you know, having weak parts of their product. And now that's just not the case. And you've got, you know, marketers' budgets are falling. They're spending less on tech. Utilization is going down. And also, we, you know, a lot of this was happening during the zero interest rate period. So the financial pressure on these CDPs was very low. You know, borrowing money was very close to free.
Yeah.
So I think all of those things are coming together at a time when it's, you know, economically quite difficult for CDPs. And yeah, I think we're starting to see it with the acquisitions and repositioning and, you know, folks sort of saying we're not a CDP anymore. We're actually, you know, X, Y, or Z. So yeah, it's a fascinating time in the industry at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are a lot of discussions going on around, indeed, the influence of the financial markets. And I'm not a financial expert, but I did see the influence it could have on currency, for instance. I think it was a year ago, a news came out that Japan was going to raise interest rates. And from some research that I did, I discovered that a lot of companies in the US were taking out loans in Japan because of the zero interest. But as soon as that the news broke around the raising interest rates in Japan, you saw this mass exodus of all these loans being taken out of Japan, or at least being paid off, and all that you know, the loans being taken out in other countries with cheaper rates. And it's incredible how under the guise of the world economy, companies can make it, or, you know, or they can break. It's incredible. It's just, yeah, it's a little bit mind-boggling. And and around composable CDPs, I think I was one of the more naive ones into being saying, who wants to do this? We've got some great packaged solutions. And I still abide by that. I mean, I think certain CDP package solutions are still good. I mean, you know, look at the Swiss Army knife. It's been going on for, I don't know how many years, but you can buy all those things separately. You know, if you want a scissors or something to file your nails with and a knife, you can buy them separately. But in the case of Swiss Army knife, there's a reason to make it compact. So there'll always be a business around that. With the MarTech Weekly, I think as soon as you stepped in as a full-time, your world opened up to a network that you've probably never imagined. How has that experience kind of broadened or deepened your understanding around MarTech compared to the consultancy work that you used to do before?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because definitely broadened. So, you know, when you're in the consulting world, you can only really work on what the clients are asking you to work on. You know, someone needs to be putting the bill for your learning.
Yeah.
Which is good. I guess the benefit is you get to go really deep and you get to see the reality of life on the ground. So the one thing, which I know we'll probably touch on MTech later in the conversation, but the one thing and the reason we want to do more research with brand side folks is to have that connection with the reality of what's going on the ground so that we can bring together, you know, what we write about tends to be very future looking and forward looking. And, you know, this is something that's happening now. This is what it could mean in the future.
And when you mention brand side, you mean the end users of the MarTech solutions, not the vendors, right?
Not the vendors. So people working at, you know, the brands, you know, the Coca-Cola, McDonald's, Mercedes, or, you know, that side of things. So it's been really great to broaden my knowledge. I know in my consulting days, I was mainly sort of in the first party data space around CRM. CDP, around marketing automation and customer engagement platforms. So it's been really fascinating to sort of broaden that, start looking at more like content, so DAM and PIM, and even getting more into the sort of like MRM and like marketing operations is managed. So I think it's definitely broader, and
you can,
I guess
you can bring out an acronym bingo game pretty soon because I haven't heard of MRM before. Can you explain that one?
Yeah, so MRM is marketing resource management. So it's like Adobe Workfront is the classic example. So this is making sure that you manage like the processes around content sign off and you know, planning and things like that.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So interesting tools.
It's like what I use for Buffer for just my personal use. But I'm sure there are enterprise scale solutions indeed do the planning, the resourcing, and the approval processes. Interesting.
Yeah, exactly that. But the long and short of it is, it's been really good, really fun. I think going from consulting and getting to go abroad is great. And then, you know, if I want to go deep on a topic, it's sort of the Sunday essay is where I do it. So
yeah,
again,
sounds like you hit the jackpot. I mean, coming back to your comment around focusing on brands, I think that's quite on topic. Since I did a review of CDP Institute's member survey 2024, and in one of the comments, David Rapp actually replied to the post and he said, well, there's a split between vendors and end users of 70-30, 70% being the vendors and 30 actually being the end users. So it does highlight kind of the influence that vendors have on a lot of the, the forming of opinions around certain topics. And my question is, now that the MarTech Weekly will mainly be focusing on brands, I know you won't leave the vendors outside in the cold, but do you see the MarTech Weekly becoming more of a reporting platform or opinion shaping force within the industry?
Yeah, I think less about shaping opinion. I mean, to a certain degree, what we do is opinion shaping, and some people agree with the opinions and some don't. But I guess what we want to do is, get the people from, you know, the companies that are implementing the tech, not the vendors, but the actual end users. And again, maybe I'll jump into MTech now, because it's a good time to do.
Yeah, definitely. Let's do that. It's actually the next question on the list, but it's very curious.
I read your mind. So MTech is the Marketing Technology Excellence Center. So it's a new program that we're starting up. The basic premise is that the industry at the moment suffers from a lack of standardization. And one of my essays was, MarTech is not a profession. So we don't have a professional standards body. That means we're not a profession. We are type of work or a type of career. But we're not
the last
like,
frontier in the wild west of data.
Oh yeah, yeah. that is an exciting title for a movie about it. Starring Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves. Yeah, there you go.
But so the things that or the pain points that not having good standards causes is number one, dissatisfaction with the people in the industry. So I know a lot of people who absolutely love the industry. They find it super interesting because it's that nice sort of intersect between creative and technical.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, a lot of the surveys that you see coming out about attitudes, a lot of it is saying people are less and less happy. So, you know, there's more frustration. Why do things take so long? Why do small changes, you know, they fail or they just don't work? And yeah. Why do I implement a new platform? It takes 18 months and I don't see value at all. So there's dissatisfaction from people who work in the industry. There is falling customer experience. So there's a lot of indicators that customer experience, or at least consumers, how they perceive customer experience is falling. They think it's getting worse. So that is sort of the second pillar. So unhappy people in the industry, customer experience falling. And the last one is just wastage. So you think about how much money is wasted.
Yeah. I think it was 10 billion. Yeah. No, what was that? I remember the graph from that Juan shared in one of his posts, or it was your post. I can't remember. Yeah. It was around wastage indeed.
Yeah. So I think Gartner estimated that 80% of digital transformations fail.
That's so, the one. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And companies are spending, you know, trillions every year on digital transformations. So yeah, we're wasting an ungodly amount of money. So those are the three sort of things that lack of standards causes. So what we want to do is work with the industry to create standards in different domains of IT. So we can't cover the whole thing, but what we want to do is divvy it up into different sort of topics. So one might be customer data management, one might be analytics and attribution.
Mm-hmm.
Probably do something around the MarTech vendor procurement and management process. But what we want to do is get together in each cohort. We want to do this globally. So for our proof of concept, we're going to have an APAC presence, which I'll lead. We've got Rutger Katz looking after Europe. And then we have Jacqueline Friedman, who's going to look after North America. And we're going to get 10 to 20 brand side, so working within the brands, MarTech leaders for each cohort, and they're going to work together to create a standards definition for that topic.
Yeah.
The idea is that we can build on it year on year, so invite new people in, new ideas, but the goal is to have across MarTech for each of these topics, here is the standards definition at this point in time, as we know. This is what excellence looks like. And I think a big part of it is making that information accessible, because companies can go to Gartner, they can go to Forrester, and, you know, I think I saw a stat about the Gartner average membership fee being $180,000 USD a year, or something along those lines.
IDC's reports are like $20,000, the CDP MarketScape ones. It's
it's insane. But
I need to get some press credentials.
Yeah, me too. But all it does is just make standards and, you know, excellence definitions inaccessible to most people doing the work. So what we want to do is open it up, make it more open and accessible to everyone. So that's the plan. So
recruiting now. I can only applaud the initiative. I remember, I think it's like 15 years ago, Jim Stern. He's the I think he's the host or the owner of Marketing Summit still to this day.
Yep.
And he started off the initiative. I might be wrong, but I thought it was Jim Stern, called the Web Analytics Association, the WAA. Yep. And it later renamed to Digital Analytics Association, which pretty much kind of took that same route. They had different chapters around the world. They had a board of members. They also had focus groups, where they were indeed working on the various definitions within digital analytics, from recruitment to in-house enablement of digital analytics data within daily processes. Is this a place where you guys drew some inspiration from, or how did you kind of approach the creation of MTech I mean, it's such a huge topic. And I think you guys are just kind of starting with a foundation, and eventually, like you said, will grow year on year based on the progress that you guys make.
Yeah. So to be fair, that is the first I'd heard about that. So I can't say I've taken inspiration from that. I think, honestly, it's more of a recognition of our audience and our subscribers and the people who attend events. When we talk to them, we just heard about all these problems with, as I said, you know, frustration, difficult to deliver customer experience or good customer experience, and then, you know, the challenges with wastage. So yeah. I think there is, again, it's a really interesting industry because there's so many really passionate people in it, but a lot of people are disaffected by the current state of things. So
here's a challenging question, though. I mean, I hear you talk about brands. I'm not on the brand side. I have been, but I'm on the kind of the consultancy side. How do you intend on involving vendors and consultancy agencies? I'm thinking the likes of Artifact, of Deloitte, just to name two. At some point, you know, their experience is accounts for something, but I hear the underlying premise is that, you know, there's so much frustration in working with MarTech. Have you guys considered involving those kind of influencers on the success of MarTech?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're still pretty early on in the process to say exactly what they will look like. But
oh, no plans? Right, come on. No, just kidding. Just kidding.
It's very politician answer of me.
But, yeah.
No, that is the honest truth. We're very early on. I think we've had a lot of interest from consultants. We've had a lot of interest, you know, people registering from vendor side as well. And I guess maybe it's worth just saying the challenges with the industry shouldn't be placed just at the feet of consultants or at the feet of vendors or at the feet of anyone. I think we're all sort of culpable in some of the wastage and the problems in the industry. So there's not any intention to cut certain people out. So yeah, so we've had a lot of interest from people throughout the whole industry, and we are still working on how we're going to make that look, how we're going to make them involved. I think one thing that we do want to get very clearly is the voice of the people who are paying the bill for the MarTech at the end of the day, which is the brand side folks. So
yeah,
one idea we're toying with is starting a cohort with those people, and then the next round of reviews and edits would involve a broader audience, including potentially vendors and consultants, and then sort of coming back together. So I think to answer your question in short, yes, we definitely want to get everyone involved. You know, there's unique perspectives from each side of the fence, so to speak. And I guess one other thing that we're noticing is there are a lot of really, really smart, some of the smartest people I know, branching out from the big consultancies and the tech companies and doing their own thing and creating their own businesses. And I mean, you know, you're a great example. Look, you're building this content part of business, and it's just I think there's like there's a lot of great independent consultants out there who it's another avenue where they've been really interested in getting involved. And I've started sort of talking to some of them, and, you know, you just have people who have such deep knowledge and connections with a certain part of the industry or the industry as a whole. So, yeah, long story short.
Yeah, you're spot on around that.
A lot of really smart people out there. And, I think we want a really well-rounded view of any topic in the MarTech industry as part of it too.
Yeah, and no, and you're spot on around the amount of knowledge that is available in the market, be it consultants, you know, freelance or with consultancies. Recently, I spoke to a guy, and I didn't prepare anything. I didn't know I was going to mention him, so I won't. So I'll just kind of protect his privacy. But the amount of knowledge that he had, I think we were on a call for like an hour and 15 minutes. It was a 30-minute call, and just hearing his background about starting with direct marketing, actually sending out catalogs, and the rise of personalization, expanding into the role of where he's done now. He's done, I don't know how many implementations, his enterprise experience, now that he's come to the point saying, hey, I don't want to do enterprises anymore, because there's, like you said, the frustration around getting so many teams working together and organization backing you up at the highest levels to get these solutions into place. But the you're right, the amount of knowledge is incredible. And I look forward to MTech evolving into this knowledge sharing platform, but also the standardization part. I actually witnessed that helping with the Digital Analytics Association, especially to the point where they started creating courses to get certified. And these were recognized certifications in the global job market. And I'm not sure, I think it's kind of dissolved now, the DAA, but it's incredible the effect an initiative like this can have on an industry as a whole, and with the recognitions from brands, but also the vendors and consultancy side. So yeah, I look forward to hearing more about MTech as 2025 goes on. And that's the good news. But I mean, kind of rolling back to these past 2 weeks, I was going to post a meme on LinkedIn. There's this funny meme called Matt Damon aging, where I think it's from Saving Private Ryan, where you see him as a young guy. And in four images, he turns into this old guy. And I was going to say, top left, where he's young, you know, November 2024, and when he's old, January 2025. The CDP, oh my God. I mean, yeah. Action IQ, Lytics, but then also 2 days ago, Treasure Data with their trade-up program. I mean, one of your predictions, as I mentioned, CDP category is going to be vacated. But what's your perspective on these mergers and these, I don't want to say aggressive, maybe kind of smart marketing by Treasure Data? Is it I've been claiming it's a buyer's market now. Companies should take make the best use of it and renegotiation. Yeah, I mean, but what's your opinion on it? You've seen it happening in front of your eyes.
Yeah, I think, again, it goes back to this idea of compatibility. So CDP worked in the first instance because it packaged all these things that you might need to do, you know, data orchestration and, you know, everything around your marketing and omnichannel and all the promises there. And having it as one package was great. And then basically with all technology, you know, particularly in the software side of technology and SaaS, it's always about bundling and unbundling. So everything got bundled together. It got packaged as a CDP, and it was really helpful. And I still, to this day, think that there are certain types of companies, in terms of their maturity, which will actually benefit more from going the package route over the composable route. But for a lot of big enterprises that have invested in their data lake and their data warehouse, you know, composable is sort of the direction of travel. What is happening is the CDP is being unbundled in all sorts of different directions. So firstly, you've got the data storage and compute, which got unbundled into the warehouse and the data lake. You've got even identity resolution. It's sort of unbundled into standalone tools like an Informatica MDM or a Tamer MDM, which can do that side of the CDP. You know, it has in some cases more sophistication. You've got the activation platforms, which, you know, they can either be part of the CDP, or you've got your ESPs and, you know, your sort of email platforms and your customer engagement platforms.
And so you're kind of saying that these package solutions are being bought for and they're going to be stripped for parts to kind of be injected into the acquirees' existing systems. I mean, that's like you said, there are certain parts of it that might work well and that can be reused. And I think that's also one of the underlying motivations for these CDBs being purchased, because they have they have proven technology.
Yeah, for sure. And you think about, so again, going back to if we forget about CDP as a category and think about what it does, it's all about customer data management, organizing customer data for use in some sort of marketing. And the Lytics acquisition, so Content Stack is a DXP. It's all about the digital experience of website, app, etc. And they have bought Lytx because Lytx can do the profile creation, build a customer, 360, and do the orchestration, real-time customer data access, which means it can power the DXP to do much more personalization, optimization, experimentation. So they're buying customer data management capabilities to sort of accentuate the features of their own stack or their own technology. And even with the Unifor, so Unifor bought ActionIQ and is repositioning it towards doing the data preparation, so zero copy data preparation in your warehouse.
Hey, you forgot the word AI. Zero copy AI. Data, what was it?
Zero copy AI data cloud, I think it was. But to be fair, I mean, it's a bit of a clunky name, but it does describe what they're trying to do. Yeah. They're trying to allow brands to do easier data preparation for AI use cases. So, again, it's like customer data management capabilities that are in a CDP have slowly been unbundled, and now the players who are struggling to survive in the post, zero interest rate period, they'll be bought up by lots of different platforms which need that customer data management. They need a form of identity resolution. They need some sort of journey orchestration or real-time capabilities. So I would be I expect to see more DSPs buying CDPs, potentially even like if one of the big ESPs or customer engagement platforms could afford one, and they might buy it to the sort of data orchestration piece. Then AI is the other obvious one. And so any platform that needs customer data management for the sake of building AI use cases, buying a CDP is a very good shortcut to sort of bring it in.
It's interesting you mentioned the AI. I think I made it into a drinking game in a previous call with someone, but it was just water. But what I do find fascinating about AI is that a lot of these vendors are taking their own route. It's profile unification, activation, cleansing, data collection. They're a dime a dozen. These methods, they're proven. Everyone's copying each other. I don't know how many times the analytics JS SDK has been forked by other MDP vendors just to be able to collect data on the client side. But what I find fascinating about AI is that so far that I've actually seen kind of demoed, there are probably a lot more, is that they're all going a different route. Salesforce is going using it for Agentforce. We have HighTouch doing AI decisioning. We have Treasure Data using it for natural language generation or analysis and generation of audiences. I think this is a good thing that might help them differentiate. But have you seen any other cases around that?
That's a good question. I think you've touched on the main ones there. I think AI agents is going to be everywhere this year. It'll be Salesforce are going to talk about it constantly. They've just hired 2,000 extra. Actually, I found this interesting. They hired 2,000 extra salespeople for Agentforce, which is basically a tool that helps you potentially replace your salespeople at some point in the future, which I thought was ironic. Yeah. But so I think agents, AI agents is a big one. AI decisioning is massive. So HighTouch, OfferFit, a few others are really playing in that space, which I think is really interesting, because in the past you've had the like Pegas and SAS, those companies doing a lot of the AI decisioning, but more around sort of inbound customer experience. A lot of telcos use those types of platforms for upsell, cross sell, all that good stuff with telecommunications. Go on.
No, I recently saw something else, and I don't think as soon as I opened my mouth, I was like, maybe that's not AI. But it's interesting to see that there's one company that I came across recently, Otoscope, and they're going a different direction. It's the first one that I've come across, and I knew him from the Web Analytics Association, this guy, and he showed me the demo around anonymous data. So what they're doing is that as soon as a user lands on the page based on their device metadata, they're able to push someone into a specific segment and show a list of products in a order that's been defined by machine learning based on six, yep. I think you said 6 to 8 months of previous e-commerce data. It's such a creative way of using the underlying technology for the benefit. And then I think, you know, anonymous users is like this, we speak about zero and first party data, but anonymous users as well, according to them, is like 60 to 80% of the users that reach websites on average are anonymous. So there's still a lot of potential there as well.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting application, because I think one thing is that AI is very good at solving some of those edge case type things. And I guess maybe third party data, anonymous data is not an edge case, but what someone has found there is that is, even though it's anonymous, there's like a treasure chest of data there. And if you have enough data, AI is very good at finding patterns. It's very good at finding the trends. And I'm assuming, I mean, I've not heard of this company myself, but I'm assuming what it does is it works out where in the world you are. It works out what device you're on.
Exactly.
From that, it can work out like lots of things about, you know, what language you probably speak, what income level you're probably at, you know, and all sorts of other different
industries. Yeah, the fascinating thing is it's all cookieless as well. They don't need to draw. Yeah. So they are from Germany. So I think it's kind of being forced on them through national legislation, or in the case of pan-European legislation. But it's such a creative way. And you're correct in saying that they do use the, you know, the device type, the OS level, they don't talk about cities, but more metropoles as well. But yeah, I mean, someone who comes on uses an Android phone or an iPhone, for instance, there are distinct differences in behavior between the two. And it's a fascinating development. And have you seen either? Can you just kind of pick your brain? Have you seen any other fascinating uses of AI at this point that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, I think another really interesting one, which I saw the other day. So we had this call with SAS, so SAS. We were speaking to a customer of theirs, and they were saying that they actually use generative AI to create more basically synthetic data to build their models on, and it actually makes the models more accurate. So again, it's not
on
one of these
synthetic data.
Wow. Yeah, synthetic data. So it's not one of these like AI agents gets all the sort of headlines. But synthetic data is something where suddenly you can make your models, you know, 10, 15, 20% more accurate. That is something that is just, you know, it shouldn't be sniffed at. Like that is a massive opportunity for companies.
Yeah.
So if you're a company that relies on, you know, your predictive models to drive most of your comms and most of your experience, then, you know, synthetic data might be a way to sort of build up your data set for training and for analysis. So yeah. that is a really good one. And I think there's a company, I can't remember their name, but they do synthetic research. So you can ask, it's basically like you would prepare questions for a panel or a, you know, like a focus group or something.
Yeah.
You ask it to a computer who creates a bunch of different AI personas, and they claim, you know, the accuracy is around 90-95% of what it would be if you went out and did it. And I guess regardless of, you know, that accuracy, the thing is actually speed. So to go out and do something similar would take you, you know, 3 to 6 months preparation, execution, actually going and talking to people.
I've been in those workshops creating personas. Wow, that's next level creativity.
Exactly, yeah. But it's just amazing. There are so many different opportunities out there. And I think the one common thread potentially is a lot of it is about improving things that are already there by making them 20% more efficient or 20% faster or 20%.
That's all it takes.
So I think that's where the real you know, people think about AI and they tend to think about AGI and, you know, will robots do my job one day? But the fact is, you know, you can use AI today to push things, you know, just change your margins, basically make things 20% more efficient, more effective. It's great.
Improve productivity. I think that's
use cases out there.
Yeah.
And yes, it's productivity.
And that's what I'm mostly using it for is, I mean, like being I used to be a one man army, and now I'm using this technology to better prepare myself for meetings, for projects, it's astounding. And it's, you know, people, I think like 99% of the people are just focused on tools like OpenAI's ChatGPT, but there are so many applications out there. It's staggering.
Yeah.
Just two final questions. I mean, for businesses, like you say, the brands.
Yep.
What advice do you have for them going into 2025? Well, we're almost in, you know, we're halfway through to February, but what kind of advice do you have for them regarding MarTech? And the second one is someone working in MarTech. So maybe it's just one answer: businesses and the individual working with MarTech. How do you, like you say and mentioned in the beginning with Juan, you know, kind of the no BS approach. What would you recommend to them to kind of prick through the, is that the word? Kind of cut through the BS and actually see what the worth is of MarTech.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to sound like I'm back in consulting here, but I think this is actually probably applies outside of MarTech as well. Anyone in business, always start with the objective. What is it that you're trying to move? Are you trying to drive more revenue? Are you trying to decrease your cost? Are you trying to decrease your exposure to potential liability? What are you trying to achieve? What metrics do you need to move? And then work back. Again, always be use case driven. Always focus on your objectives, your KPIs, what you're trying to move. And then this is the beauty of composability. You can pick and choose different platforms or different processes to get to that endpoint. And yeah, I guess especially with AI, there's so much hype. There's so many vendors trying to cram it down people's throats. But the question always to those vendors is, which one of my high-level KPIs that I am judged on will you help me move, and by how much? That should always be the question, and you can work back from there. And I think that's
signing up for the MarTech Weekly would help too, right?
That was going to be my next one for individuals. I'm joking, but I'm sort of not joking as well, because I think my advice would actually be engage with the community. So the one thing I've found from joining the MarTech Weekly is it has forced me out there into the community of MarTech folks. And we are a very passionate, very driven bunch. And there are so many people that have so much time to give. Like, you know, for example, you're having me on your podcast right now. And, you know, everyone I speak to in the industry is really giving and just really lovely people. So I would say, if you're not engaging with the wider MarTech industry and everyone, all the, you know, brilliant minds out there, then start doing it. And you can just start on LinkedIn, start commenting on things, following people, and, you know, going to in-person events. But that is the way I think to sort of ensure your career and make sure that you have a long and successful career in MarTech. That's my personal opinion.
Excellent. Yeah, I hope to attend the forum next year in London. I couldn't make it this year for an operation, but no, great advice. I think you hit all the spots there. I have, before the call, I actually contacted Juan and I told him, hey, do you have kind of some juicy details that I can ask? I can ask Keanu here. There are two things I need to ask you. First one is, you went to a music festival and you said it was the last one you were ever going to attend.
Yeah. Oh God, you have done your homework. Yes, I went to a music festival in December, and I had a great time. But I don't know. I think I'm getting a bit old for it. You know, sleeping in tents and drinking too much, and yeah, burning in the Australian sun. So I don't know.
Oh, that's got to be mad. Yeah.
The time, but we'll see. We'll see if I stick to that.
All right. The last question, and I'm not going to, I tried looking it up. I couldn't find it. Well, I did find a definition, but I don't think it's the one that you mean. Apparently you say the word plesh too much.
Yeah. It's
what's that about?
Short for pleasure. So
for pleasure.
I'm just saying my pleasure. So whenever someone says thanks, I just say pleasure.
Oh, wow. Okay. Because yeah, it's a small creek, a small river. It's I had to look it up in the dictionary. Yeah.
That's good to know. But that's the meaning.
I think that's a great word for you to end on, because Keanu, I want to thank you for your selflessness today. Your time has been incredible in this podcast today, and the insights that you've shared with us. I'm really looking forward to MTech in 2025, seeing how the MarTech Weekly further develops. And as long as I can remain a member, I'll remain a subscriber for the MarTech Weekly. It's been so insightful for me personally in my career. And I hope you continue all the writing, you get all the time and space to do your research, because the articles have truly been inspiring. So thank you very much for your time today.
No, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you, mate.